This is Jordan Secchio today on Jay Secchio Live. With the shutdown over, a congressional committee made up of bipartisan members of Congress from the House and the Senate meets. President Trump gives them less than 50% chance of coming up with a solution on border security. We'll talk about it today on Jay Secchio Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Secchio Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Secchio.
Welcome to Jay Secchio Live. This is Jordan Secchio. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We're going to get back to the New York abortion law tomorrow. We're analyzing that right now, possible actions we can take. Legal actions that we can take. We're looking at the other laws happening across the country that are similar to that New York abortion law. So don't think for a minute that we just talked about it yesterday and are moving on. We are not. But we did want to take a day to update you because we haven't done so yet. You know, we talked a lot last week about the shutdown. Would it stop? Of course, it came to a temporary end this weekend. The president was able to sign a temporary spending bill into law, getting those federal employees back to work, but also paid their salaries, their back pay coming as well. But it only runs till February 15th. Now, what will happen during that time? Well, President Trump next Tuesday will deliver a State of the Union address the normal way with a joint session of Congress in the chamber of the House of Representatives. There is a bipartisan committee of Republican and Senate, Republican and Democrats, both from the Senate and the House meeting, trying to come up with a deal on border security by February 15th. But as the president has stated to the Wall Street Journal, he thinks there's a less than 50% chance that they will come up with an agreement, which means could we be leading to another shutdown? Or will the president decide to declare a national emergency on the border wall issue, take that out of the funding issue, and move along with that fight that he'll have to fight through his executive branch in the courts, likely, and then get the government funded? I want to get your thoughts on how this initial shutdown came to a close, what you believe should happen next, what should the next actions be taken by the president. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. And I want to go right to Washington, D.C., because I know Than Bennett has been in the meetings on Capitol Hill. Than, what are you picking up from members of Congress and their staffs that you work with, both the Senate and the House, on where things stand? I mean, they've only got until February 15th. It's a couple of weeks, basically, at this point.
Yeah, I think the president was being pretty candid and honest with his assessment of being a less than 50% chance that this would produce a solution in the long term. And here's why, Jordan. The 17 members of this conference committee, pretty evenly divided, 9 Democrats, 8 Republicans. You know, they very well may come up with agreement just between the 17 of them, something that they can vote out with the majority. But, Jordan, the odds that they are going to be able to produce something that will pass a Republican Senate and a Democrat House, those odds are much lower. And I think the president probably peg them just about right. Now, I'll say this. I don't think we should give up on that process. These kinds of conference committees done through with appropriation members often do come out of a deal that can squeak through both chambers. So I do think that is the best case scenario. But I think the president is right to be looking at other options to consider how he would proceed if they don't produce a result. Because we've seen this a lot of times, Jordan. They go to a conference committee and they either can't come up with a deal that they can even report out, or the deal that they report out can't clear one of those chambers. So you're right, a short term here leading up to February 15th, and it's confined to that Department of Homeland Security bill that we're talking about in this conference committee. I think the president's right, probably slightly beneath 50-50 odds of coming to resolution.
Did you agree with the president's move to temporarily end the shutdown so that the federal employees would get paid and their back pay? I mean, we could be looking at a potential another shutdown. I mean, if you look at this, or will there be a declaration of national emergency? So did you agree with the initial move by the president to end the shutdown? And what do you think should happen next? We want your opinion, your thoughts. 1-800-684-3110. If you were advising the president, what would you advise him to do in these next steps in dealing with a very difficult Congress right now? We'll also go through those members of Congress. Who is on this conference committee? Maybe a member of Congress from your state. You could give a call into their office and let them know your thoughts. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. We are going to be taking a lot of phone calls. What are your thoughts on this issue? The end of this initial shutdown, what should the president do next? If you were advising the president, what would you tell him to do? 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back on Jay Secchio Live.
A Muslim medical doctor in training publicly threatened to, quote, purposely prescribe the wrong meds to Jewish patients. Laura Kalab, a first-year resident at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, brazenly said, quote, Allah will kill the Jews. She called Jewish people, quote, dogs, and is brutally unsympathetic about the Holocaust. This anti-Semitism turns the Hippocratic Oath, quote, do no harm, on its head. Unsurprisingly, Kalab is part of the BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, further exposing BDS for what it is, thinly veiled anti-Semitism. At the ACLJ, we've been aggressively fighting the BDS movement and these sickening attacks on the Jewish people in Israel. Now we're sending a formal complaint to the medical board in Ohio. Kalab and any other medical professional who espouses this deadly level of hatred for Jews should lose their medical license. Take action with us now. Add your name to our petition to stop vile anti-Semitic attacks on Jews. You can add your name online, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. So what happens next now that there is a temporary funding bill for the government that lasts until February 15th? Well, the president will deliver a State of the Union next week. That is on Tuesday. So next Tuesday, he'll be delivering a State of the Union address a week from today. It'll be the normal kind of joint session of Congress in the House of Representatives chamber with the Republicans and Democrats attending and the kind of normal State of the Union that we're used to. There's a conference committee meeting right now. It has four Republicans and three Democrats from the Senate on it, six Democrats and four Republicans on it from the House. They are trying to come up with a plan specifically on the border security that can pass both the House and the Senate. The president said there's less than 50% chance he believes that they'll be able to do that, but he hopes that they can. So he's kind of letting Congress do this. And Than, you said during the break, I think this is important for our audience to know before we go right down to the phones, right back to the phones and start getting people's comments in, is that it wasn't so much the president, you know, people try to say the president folded or caved, but it was, he saw writing on the wall, I think with his, inside his own party, it was Republican senators. Seven were willing to go along with this Schumer plan, and they were, again, kind of hinting at the idea that there could be more, enough even possibly to override a veto. So it was the Senate Republicans that were probably not ready to extend the shutdown any longer.
Yeah, I think that's an absolute fact, Jordan. I mean, the day of these two votes inside the United States Senate, one proposal that was put forward by President Trump, one that was put forward by Senator Schumer, it was known fairly early in the day that neither was going to get to the 60 votes that was needed to invoke cloture and ultimately pass. But the question, Jordan, was how many people would cross the aisle for either of the measures? Only Joe Manchin crossed the aisle to vote for President Trump's proposal. Six Senate Republicans, Jordan, voted across the aisle to open the government with a CR and not a single dollar for wall funding. They just wanted to get the government back open. So I really do think the president was probably willing to stay on that legislative track longer than the Republican Senate was. Those six senators, Jordan, I think that was actually a small number from those inside the conference that told the vice president, look, it's time to take this first step. So I don't particularly agree with that strategy, but I think the Republican Senate were the ones that were not willing to hold out any longer. I just hope now in this intervening period that this negotiation with this conference committee is going to come out with a product that actually does deliver funding for the wall, because I think, Jordan, yet again, this is the president returning to the legislative process and essentially imploring Republicans and Democrats to join him in securing the border. I really do think this may be the last shot for the legislative process, though.
Let me answer this question when it came in on Facebook, and this is came in. I think it was Dana on Facebook wrote in, are we represented well in the discussions about the wall? I'm curious which members of Congress are on the committee. Here, I'm just going to read them for you. The Senate, there's four Republicans. Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama, he's the appropriations chair. Senator Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia, she is the chair of the Senate Homeland Security Appropriations Subcommittee. Senator John Hoeven of North Dakota is a member of the Senate Appropriate. They're all appropriations based. And Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri. The three Democrats are Patrick Leahy, Dick Durbin, and John Tester. In the House, the six Democrats are Nita Lowey of New York, Lucille Robiel Allard of California, David Price of North Carolina, Barbara Lee of California, Henry Collier of Texas, Pete Aguilar of California. The four Republicans are Kay Granger of Texas, Chuck Fleischman of Tennessee, Tom Graves of Georgia, and Stephen Palazzo of Mississippi. But, Dan, these are primarily folks from the Appropriations Committee world.
Yeah, people from the Appropriations Committee in both the House and the Senate, because, again, they're trying to negotiate differences between the Department of Homeland Security Appropriations Bill. That's what this is. I know there are a lot of other issues that might come into play, Jordan, but if they decide to craft an agreement that goes outside of that bill, they would actually have to do it through a couple of separate measures. So all of these members are from inside the Appropriations Committee, and I won't render a judgment on whether or not they're good members or bad members, but I think I can answer the caller in this way. You're probably not looking at very many hardliners. There might be a couple of exceptions here, but hardliners on the immigration issue from either side. Now, but if you do want the prospect of reaching some kind of a deal that can get voted on, Appropriations Committee members, Jordan, usually are fairly good at that, because that's really a big part of their job is negotiating differences between spending measures that can then clear both chambers. So this group probably has a better chance than most groups at coming up with a deal that will pass. Now, what's inside that deal, and is it good or bad? I think your guess and the caller's guess is probably as good as mine.
Terrence on Facebook writes, and I agree with President Trump's willingness to compromise for the benefit of workers' pay, but if no agreement appears possible approaching the 15th, I think President Trump should immediately declare a national emergency. I've got those legal memos we've already prepared. If in case the president does go that route, we have prepared memos and looked at this thoroughly at the ACLJ, defining the president's authority to do so and likelihood of success, which we believe ultimately would probably be up at the Supreme Court of the United States, where, again, get out of the Ninth Circuit and courts like that, where they would be probably, I'd say, very cautious about getting involved in the president's decision-making power that he was given by Congress. So Congress gave the president this power to declare a national emergency, and then the courts questioning what is and what is not a national emergency. Are they going to set some kind of standard? I think that we believe ultimately if it got to the Supreme Court, they would be very concerned about getting involved in that discussion process when it comes to the separation of powers. But we do have calls coming in from lots of different sides and lots of different opinions. Davenport's calling in from Virginia on line 5. Davenport, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Comment was just, we're in this interesting situation where the president does not have a majority of support, you know, from the whole population. It's a minority, and because of the Electoral College, the Senate is kind of a minority-dominated institution. The Supreme Court is dominated by the minority because of who was nominated when. That doesn't delegitimize those institutions, but it suggests that the president should be sensitive to the fact that a majority of the people don't want the government held hostage for a wall. What they want is immigration reform. And I think, you know, as opposed to kind of, you know, creating a crisis with DACA, as a hostage and then, you know, holding federal workers hostage, a more collaborative approach to overall reform is what the majority wants.
Okay, so let me ask you this. If you got DACA and comprehensive immigration reform, so even potentially work visas, I don't know if it would go so far as pathway to citizenship for all those people in the shadows who are here illegally, who would be on long-term paths to either permanent residency, if that was on the table, full immigration reform, would you push Democrats to agree to fund the areas of the border that do need the wall? I mean, remember, that's what we're talking about now, areas of the border that do need walls that have been reported by the Department of Homeland Security, not 2,000 miles of wall, but areas that need actual physical barriers built. Would you support that kind of plan if it was, again, you said they want compromise, so it's not holding anything hostage, it's negotiating.
Well, I think everybody, you know, wants. Yeah, I think that's what this country wants, and it's a difficult problem because a lot of people have tried to solve it. You know, rather than the president saying, "Well, everybody else was unsuccessful because, you know, they're stupid or they're not him," you know, recognize, yes, it's a difficult problem. Let's get the government.
It shouldn't
open
be that difficult. I mean, the government's open now, though. It shouldn't be that difficult. The problem is, Davenport, do you really believe Nancy Pelosi is going to let that go to the floor of the House when she has been the one that said, I won't let anything go to the floor if it includes any funding for any wall whatsoever. So even if it included all of those, the DACA as a codification and the border security funding, she's holding this hardline position. She's one of a few Democrats who always has that she is not going to fund any kind of barriers whatsoever. So what happens then? I mean, that's the problem I think that we're in right now is that it's tough to negotiate and compromise when you're dealing with someone who says, I won't. Now, I think the president will. I think it's that Nancy Pelosi has shown she won't so far.
Well, I actually agree with you. I think the issue is people don't want this to be a personal issue with the president or Nancy Pelosi or anybody else. I think a lot of people on both sides want to see the problem solved. And I think that, you know, my hope is that I think Nancy Pelosi would have pressure in her own party if, you know, to discuss overall immigration reform. I don't think that most Democrats would say they don't want to see any barriers constructed anywhere. But it's, you know, so part of it's nomenclature, but part of it is just the overall environment. You know, most Americans want to see our elected officials of both parties work together and solve the problem.
So I'll go to Than Bennett now, our government affairs director. Than, I mean, any indication that Pelosi, we've seen some kind of pressure building in her from some of her lieutenants that if this kind of plan was put forward, we don't know if it will be. It's been a kind of out there is offered by the president. So far, she said no to it, but there could be more added. Is there a potential that you could put so many different sweeteners to this deal on immigration reform that Nancy Pelosi would be overcome by her own party?
The pressure is going to have to come from within her conference, Jordan. She's not going to do it voluntarily. She said again just yesterday that, look, I've spoken on the wall. We're not going to fund the wall. But here's the problem, Jordan, and you spoke to this a little bit, but Davenport talking about, you know, deferring to the experts, following the experts' guidance. The president has said that he will follow the recommendations of Homeland Security and Customs and Border Patrol and ICE. And, Jordan, they have spoken and they have given their recommendations to these conference committees. You know what those recommendations look like? They look pretty much like the president's proposal. Part wall, part technology, more agents, more judges. Those were all in the president's plan, and the president added on top of that some Democrat priorities, and Speaker Pelosi still wouldn't put it on the floor. Here's what'll be interesting, Jordan, though. On Tuesday, when the president makes this case to the American people, who I think will agree with him, Nancy Pelosi is going to be sitting right behind him. That'll be a tough spot for her to be in.
All right, folks, as you can tell, we are taking a lot of phone calls. What should happen next? We have this short window of time until February 15th. The president will deliver the State of the Union next week. What should happen next when it comes to funding the government? Right now, we're just in this temporary funding bill. And again, we could be facing a shutdown, national emergency. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. A Muslim medical doctor in training publicly threatened to, quote, purposely prescribe the wrong meds to Jewish patients. Laura Kalab, a first-year resident at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, brazenly said, quote, Allah will kill the Jews. She called Jewish people, quote, dogs, and is brutally unsympathetic about the Holocaust. This anti-Semitism turns the Hippocratic Oath, quote, do no harm, on its head. Unsurprisingly, Kalab is part of the BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, further exposing BDS for what it is, thinly veiled anti-Semitism. At the ACLJ, we've been aggressively fighting the BDS movement and these sickening attacks on the Jewish people in Israel. Now we're sending a formal complaint to the Medical Board in Ohio. Kalab and any other medical professional who espouses this deadly level of hatred for Jews should lose their medical license. Take action with us now. Add your name to our petition to stop vile anti-Semitic attacks on Jews. You can add your name online, ACLJ.org.
So we're going to get back to that abortion issue, too, in New York. I want to let you all know that. We've got our legal team working on kind of next steps for analysis for you on the broadcast, what can be done, what's happening across the country and other states as well. So don't think we're moving away completely from that. But we do want to update you on what's happening with our federal government. The president is going to deliver the State of the Union a week from today. He accepted that invitation from Nancy Pelosi. It'll be the normal kind of State of the Union, joint session of Congress in the House chamber. So that will be Tuesday evening. The funding for the government runs out on February 15th, so not much longer. There's a bipartisan committee. We've gone through the members of the committee who are working on some kind of deal on border security funding or the funding for the Department of Homeland Security that would flow through. So it's a bipartisan group. President gives it a less than 50% chance of working, but he's not saying the no chance, and he says he hopes they do. Are able to come up with something that can pass both the House and the Senate. There's also the option of declaring a national emergency. We'll talk about that as well. I know we've got some calls coming in about it at 1-800-684-3110. But this is really an opportunity. We wanted to update you on what's happening and then kind of hear from you about what you think what should happen next. Well, we've got this time where the government is being funded. People are getting their paychecks. But also, what if we come to another deadline and there's no legislation? I mean, do you just continue to open the government with these short-term spending bills and keep negotiating, or do you declare the national emergency and get a full spending bill pushed forward? That is kind of, I mean, the options available if there is no solution legislatively. And I say if because they are working on it. I mean, again, it's tough to see how that would work with where Nancy Pelosi stands now. But as Stan said in the last segment, she may be feeling too much pressure ultimately from her own party. If enough immigration reform is put on the table, comprehensive immigration reform is put on the table, to stand in the way of legislation moving forward. Let's go right to the phones. Andrew in Colorado on line two. Andrew, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. And I have two comments, basically in the form of questions.
Yeah.
What is it about government that has a problem with spending money, especially when it concerns our security? And what agenda of those who oppose spending the money for the wall would be higher than that of security?
Yeah, well, I'd say, again, when it comes right down to it, this has become, Than, a completely partisan issue so far with the left and the right. So I mean, now I think the right is correct on this issue. I think that there should be border security. So I think one side is correct here. But it's really become a partisan issue when it's polled. I mean, it's basically right down the aisle of should there be the wall. It's or barriers built, and it all depends on how you ask the question. But when the right questions are asked, it's about splits the country, which again it's politicized an issue, which is really an issue that unfortunately shouldn't be so political.
And Jordan, it's not even a little bit about the money anymore. It is not even a little bit about Democrats thinking that $5.7 billion a year to secure the border is too much. And it's not about that because the proposals that have been put on the table, some of them, Jordan, spend considerably less in the long run, and they still don't want to go there. This is entirely about not wanting to give a political victory to one side or the other. And that's why it seems to me like the way out of this is the way that was charted by the president, saying, look, these are Republicans and Democrats in a room. Let's come together. Let's put a solution on the table for the American people that all of us can get credit for, even though it shouldn't have to be about political credit, Jordan. Let's share the political credit. Let's secure the border. Let's get the American people what they want. Let's make it about substance over personalities. But Jordan, for Nancy Pelosi, for Speaker Pelosi, I really do think that this is still more about personality than substance. And I think that because I think a majority of her conference would vote for the substance on the table, but she does not want to give the President of the United States a victory on this issue until she decides, and it's going to be about substance, the American people over personality. I think it will be her conference that will have to overrun her wishes.
All right, well, let's take some more calls. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Mel is calling in from Montana on line six. Mel, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I am just wondering, why wouldn't the president declare a national emergency. What are the downplays if he does that?
Okay, so it's not. Here's the downside. You declare a national emergency, you will be challenged in court. We believe the president can ultimately win in court, but that would take its way to the U.S. Supreme Court. So, again, you're going to have the Department of Justice defending. Also, you have to come up with the funds. So there's two issues. You'd have to use different funds available in the government, in the executive branch. So funds that have already been appropriated by Congress that are already in the executive branch's control, and you'd have to use those funds. So it wouldn't be new funding from Congress. It'd be existing funding. Now, a lot of funding has already been found. So I think that's some of the delay in making a declaration is that they were seeing what would be available to use to build the border barriers where they are necessary. So there's part one is that you know you're going to have a court battle. Part two, I think you'll win, but you will have it. Part two is that you're not getting a new funding. And part three, I think, is just it's better to go through the legislative process always because to have it pass through as law is, again, it kind of sets a stage for the future as well. But, Than, I do believe the president's probably, again, we know he's still considering it. I don't think any action will be taken on that before this next deadline unless it's clear that there will be no compromise on the border security funding.
Yeah, I think it absolutely has to be on the table for him, Jordan. I mean, we've been very clear on this broadcast. It's not the ideal way to go for all the reasons that you laid out. And I would add one more to it, and that is that for the long-term support of it, of course it's going to be better to have buy-in from both sides of the aisle so that one party or the other doesn't walk away from it when they assume power. But look, if it becomes absolutely clear that Nancy Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi, is not willing to come to the table on this, the authority granted to the president under the National Emergencies Act might just have to be the route he goes. And I would just say this. Within that framework, Jordan, it is very clear under other statutes that he has power to construct things like a wall. I mean, the Water Resources and Development Act of 1986, for example, specifically says that in cases of emergency, the president can take dollars from the Secretary of the Army and direct the Secretary to construct projects in the furtherance of national security. Really couldn't be more applicable to this exact situation that we're in. So again, is it ideal? No. Will the president be forced to go down that path? And would he do it if he has to? I think he probably would, Jordan. He's been pretty resolute in saying, I'm building that wall in a way that is legally permissible to me one way or the other.
All right. Again, we're going to continue to take your phone calls. Remember, we have a second half hour coming up at Jay Sekulow Live. So keep calling. Keep getting your comments in on Facebook, too, as well, and on Periscope. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on the air. With the government open now, temporarily until February 15th, the president will give his State of the Union a week from today. There's a bipartisan committee of both House members and Senate members working on trying to come up with a plan that would be bipartisan to fund the Department of Homeland Security. That would be ultimately where the funding for border security would flow through. The president says less than 50% chance he thinks that they can get it done, but he hopes that they can. There's the national emergency option on the table. And what we're asking you is, what should happen next if Congress cannot come to an agreement and get legislation to the president? Do you do another shutdown? I don't know how popular that's going to be with people, but it's certainly a potential. Do you do more short-term spending and let Congress keep negotiating? Probably only if you see some kind of glimmer of hope. Or do you declare the national emergency and just get the government funded? There's different options available, but I think all of them for the president will include an attempt, and at least a strong attempt, to begin the construction of border barriers where they are necessary. Give us a call. Second half hour coming up, 1-800-684-3110. We'll get more updates, too, from Than on what's circulating on Capitol Hill as well. 1-800-684-3110 to join us live on the air today. And again, that abortion issue in New York, we're going to get back to that tomorrow on the broadcast. We wanted to update you on your government today.
A Muslim medical doctor in training publicly threatened to, quote, purposely prescribe the wrong meds to Jewish patients. Laura Kalab, a first-year resident at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, brazenly said, quote, Allah will kill the Jews. Kalab and any other medical professional who espouses this deadly level of hatred for Jews should lose their medical license. Take action with us now. Add your name to our petition to stop vile anti-Semitic attacks on Jews. You can add your name online, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
All right, folks, let me set the stage for those just joining us in the second half hour of the broadcast. We're taking a lot of phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. We brought in some more analysis to the broadcast as well for the second half hour. Where do we stand with the state of our country? Well, the federal government is funded through February 15th, short-term funding bill passed. We believe, and Stan's analysis is that this is because of Senate Republicans' pressure that they were kind of beginning to cave. It was not the president ultimately, but he was dealing with realities of a United States Senate Republican majority that was just not willing to keep the shutdown going. So there's a temporary spending bill that lasts until February 15th. It means the federal employees will get their back pay as well as their current paychecks that they, and they are back to work. But it only goes through February 15th. The president will deliver the State of the Union a week from today. It'll be the normal kind of way at the joint session of Congress on Capitol Hill in the House chamber, Republicans and Democrats together from the House, the Senate, as well as the cabinet and members of the U.S. Supreme Court will be in attendance. So that will be a major opportunity for the president to address the nation before the funding runs out on February 15th in this current short-term spending bill. There is a bipartisan committee of Republicans and Democrats from the House and the Senate working together on a spending plan that would include funding for border security. The president gives that chance a less than 50% chance of working. But again, that's not 10% chance. It's a less than 50. And he's hopeful that they are able to do this legislatively. He's also still got the national emergency option. I mean, we could be heading to another shutdown potentially if legislation doesn't get to the president's desk by February 15th and the funding runs out at midnight and on February, you know, once the clock strikes February 16th at 12:01, there's got to be legislation on his desk to keep the government open. That means that Democrats have got to get something through the House and the Republicans have to get through something through the Senate that they agree on and can get to the president's desk. We're going to take your phone calls on this at 1-800-684-3110. In just a few minutes, probably we come back from this first short part of the break. But I want to bring in Andy Economo as well as Wes Smith to the discussion. Andy, to you first. We've been asking people, what's the next move for the president? Is it the national emergency declaration if Congress can't get this done?
I would like to see that happen. I don't know whether it's going to be because he's getting pushback from the Republicans.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the ones who are giving the problem. There's many executive orders dealing with national emergencies that are extant, that exist, and they're out there right now. I don't see what the problem is. We know that crime is rampant on the border. There was a decrease in that at the beginning of the Trump administration. That is increased right now. We know that people are coming in from nations other than Central and South America. We know that there are issues with respect to border security at the southern border. I think that there is enough for the president to declare an emergency, but I think he's hesitant to do so because members of his own party are just not supporting him on that. And that's what I think the real problem is right here. It's not, unfortunately, the Democrats, it is, to be sure. But, I mean, when you can't get the support of the Republicans to do what you want to do with respect to the emergency of the border, what do you do?
Data writes it on Facebook, would it go on for years in courts if it's a national emergency declaration? No. The courts would handle this fairly quickly. We'd get to the U.S. Supreme Court probably ultimately.
That's right. I think this would be on an accelerated docket, and I think it would go through the district courts, the Court of Appeals, and go to the Supreme Court right away because it is of such national, what, emergency.
Yeah, the president may take a couple losses at the district court, circuit court level. I'm just, Andy, I think the Supreme Court would be very nervous about weighing in on what is or what is not a national emergency, and the separation of powers issue.
I agree with you totally. I think that with the current makeup of the court, these are not matters that are justiciable. What does that mean? Subject to courts making judicial decisions. These are political and security matters that really are left and ought to be left to the executive, and I think the Supreme Court would be very hesitant to weigh in on that.
All right, folks. When we come back, we'll get Wes in the conversation as well. Than, continue the conversation, and all of you. I know Jim's holding on, Brian, Carrie, Steve, Dan, and Manuel. And we keep taking your calls as well at 1-800-684-3110. And we will start taking those right when we come back from this break. Of course, we take your comments on Facebook and Periscope as well. If you're on Facebook and Periscope, share this broadcast with your friends and family. Because, again, we're laying out all the options, what could happen. Because we know that there's a finite end to this funding, February 15th. What happens next? We'll talk about it on Jay Sekulow Live.
A Muslim medical doctor in training publicly threatened to, quote, purposely prescribe the wrong meds to Jewish patients. Laura Kalab, a first-year resident at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, brazenly said, quote, Allah will kill the Jews. She called Jewish people, quote, dogs, and is brutally unsympathetic about the Holocaust. This anti-Semitism turns the Hippocratic Oath, quote, do no harm, on its head. Unsurprisingly, Kalab is part of the BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, further exposing BDS for what it is, thinly veiled anti-Semitism. At the ACLJ, we've been aggressively fighting the BDS movement and these sickening attacks on the Jewish people in Israel. Now we're sending a formal complaint to the medical board in Ohio. Kalab and any other medical professional who espouses this deadly level of hatred for Jews should lose their medical license. Take action with us now. Add your name to our petition to stop vile anti-Semitic attacks on Jews. You can add your name online, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
All right, we're about to head to your phone calls, but I want to bring in Wes Smith to this discussion as well. We've been asking people, and we got lots of phone calls to go through and lots of commentary to provide and questions to answer. Wes, we've been asking people, you know, what should the president do? The reports are he would either, it would be another shutdown if they don't get him legislation or the national emergency declaration. What would you be advising the president right now? I mean, that's what we're asking people to do. I mean, we know about half the country wants this border security. It's become very partisan. The issue's become very partisan. Unfortunately, it shouldn't be. And we know that there's a lot of options on the table for comprehensive immigration reform to be part of this package.
Yeah, and it needs to be. And much of what's involved with comprehensive immigration reform is something that both parties want. The National Emergencies Act is really clear about the president's authority, and to a certain extent, it's pretty subjective on the executive's part about what constitutes an emergency. It gives him the authority to declare one. It does not define what an emergency is because that varies. So if it goes to the courts and it eventually would wind its way to the courts, I think it's unlikely that the Supreme Court would want to interfere with the president's both Article 2 and statutory authority to declare an emergency. Here's the thing, though. This committee, this bipartisan, bicameral committee that's meeting as we speak, trying to work out a compromise, if you look at the makeup of that committee, you would think, well, this is hopeful. This might actually work. All of them come from the various appropriation committees in the respective houses of Congress. And so they really understand negotiating. And you think maybe they will pull this off. But here's the deal. Nancy Pelosi is the Speaker of the House. She controls what comes to the floor of the House for a vote. Since 2006, by my count, there have been 12 measures regarding immigration reform and border security. And Nancy Pelosi has voted no on all 12 of those measures. Even when Chuck Schumer and other Democrats voted yes, she has consistently voted no. So no matter what her colleagues on this committee come up with, I think the president's being realistic about it being less than a 50% chance, because I just don't see Nancy Pelosi allowing something like this, some compromise measure, to actually be voted on in the House.
All right, folks, we're going to now get to your calls. People have been holding on, so let's go right to Manuel in Texas on line one. Manuel, thanks for holding on the air. To be on the air, you're with us now.
Yes, sir. How are you doing, Charlie?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Well, Thank you for taking my call. As you ask, what do I want for our chief, for our commander-in-chief to do is build the wall. Build the wall yesterday, Jordan, not today. Should have been already on the ground. Because you and I know, I mean, it has all the authority, not only by our Constitution, but Almighty God as well. Pelosi, we know where she stands. I mean, one word, the wall must go on. This is my message for our commander-in-chief now. There's no other way out, Jordan. The wall has to go now.
And so, again, I mean, you're. I think then would support the view that if you can't get it done through Congress, you've got to do it through national emergency declaration. So I appreciate your phone call. I mean, that's what we're asking people is how important is it? What would you do next? So what are your next steps? Interesting call coming in from Brian in Illinois. We could explain that, too, to people. Brian, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Brian.
Hey, I read an article this morning from the Washington Examiner.
Yep.
It talks about Trump can build a wall without declaring an emergency. And they reference 10 U.S.C. Yep. Section 284. I wanted to get what your thoughts are on that.
Okay, so let me explain to people. This is the U.S. Code. That's what USC means. So the law, once it's passed by Congress, it's codified into text that you can then refer to like Brian just did. So this is Section 10 of the U.S. Code. The subsection 284. This is the title, Support for Counter Drug Activities and Activities to Counter Transnational Organized Crime. We have addressed this before, but again, just to explain to people what that is. And it starts off with that the Secretary of Defense, which is unlike other provisions, which usually prevent the U.S. military from getting involved in domestic issues, the posse comitatus, all of those issues that come to light. But it says, support to other agencies. The Secretary of Defense may provide support for the counter-drug activities or activities to counter transnational organized crime of any other department or agency of the federal government or of any state, local, tribe, or foreign law enforcement agency for any purposes set forth. And it talks about building structures. It talks about even increasing existing structures. So that is a potential. We've looked at it as another way the president could rely on his power. I think that doing so without the declaration of national emergency, it may actually be a tougher haul because then you may let the courts start parsing what is and what is not allowed by this this specific statute, where the national emergency statute is very broad.
Well, the national emergency statute would give him the powers because of the breadth of the right under the Constitution to provide for the general welfare and the common defense, to be sure. But this statute that the caller talked about, 10 U.S.C. 284, actually uses the word fence. It says in there a fence. So that language would provide so that for the kinds of barriers, fences, structures, whatever, strategic defense mechanisms, if you want to call it that, that the president is talking about building. So there would be power through the Secretary of Defense to do that. I would go the National Emergency Declaration route.
I think so, too, and here's why this is specific to drug enforcement. That is part of border security, but it's not the only reason. And it does, under this subsection 7, constructions of roads and fences and installation of lighting to block drug smuggling corridors across international boundaries, which include our southern borders, of the United States. So certainly you could make the case this could be done this way, because that is a huge problem through our southern border. Than Congress does not love the idea of the National Emergency Declaration. We can kind of say that point blank. I mean, there are certainly some members of Congress who would support the president doing that, so it's not all. So I think he's probably got to, if he takes that route of using executive authority that's been given to him by Congress, whether it's this statute, the National Emergency Statute, or a combination of both, you take all of that together when you go into this battle, because you may not be getting a lot of support from Capitol Hill. I think we need to be honest with people. He may not be getting a lot of support from Republican leaders in the House or the Senate on the National Emergency Declaration.
I think that's conclusively accurate, Jordan. I mean, first of all, I would say one of the advantages of going the national emergency route is you have additional funding pools other than the one that was referenced in that statute that you can draw from. We've already talked about some of them. Some of them are very specifically applied. But look, I think you would find members of both the Republican and Democrat caucus, especially in the United States Senate, Jordan, who would not like this declaration and who would actually probably move to stop it. Now, look, this is actually what I think is the strongest argument against the courts intervening in this. is that when the National Emergencies Act was initially passed almost 40 years ago, Congress initially said, well, we can end a national emergency if we pass a concurrent resolution. That doesn't even require the president's signature. And the court stepped in and said, no, that's a violation of separation of power. So the act was actually amended, Jordan, that said, okay, it has to be a joint resolution, which requires the president's signature or an override. And the court let that stand. So, Jordan, I think the courts have already spoken on this issue, and the remedy for ending a national emergency relies only in the legislative branch. So I think you would get pushback. The question would be, would you have enough pushback where they could actually end that national emergency by passing a joint resolution? I think the answer to that is probably no, but you're correct. There would be opposition, including from inside the Republican Party.
We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Let's grab another call. Jim in Oregon, online for Jim. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a quick comment and then a question.
Sure.
Nancy Pelosi, I believe, she is never going to compromise. Yeah. She's never going to go against not giving a dollar for the wall because she'll just have the egg on her face, and she's not that kind of personality to accept that. So with that being said, on the 15th, I would go the national emergency route. But my question is how long do you think it would be logistically before either the courts would say it's already been the matter's already been settled and here's where it is legally, or that they are going to settle the matter and go forward in allowing President Trump to use those alternate funds?
I mean, it all depends on what actually, you know, what panels are drawn. The Democrats will file lawsuits. What panels of judges are drawn? I mean, we say the Ninth Circuit is probably not good on this, but you never know. They may still say, we're not weighing in on this issue of national emergency. And this is up to the legislative branch who passed the law in Congress, but likely they would. So you're probably looking at the Supreme Court having to determine this. So months.
I would say 60 days, 2 months, 3 months, because
not forever.
I mean, it would not go on forever because it is an emergency in the sense that it needs to be determined and it needs to be determined quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, we're going to continue to take your phone calls. You know what we do in the final segment of the broadcast. We go through as many calls as possible. We've got Than Bennett with us, Wes Smith, Andy Economo. We're all answering your questions and comments. Again, we know one thing. The funding for the current government runs out February 15th. We know that there's a committee put together, bipartisan committee meeting, trying to get a deal on border funding. They're just kind of coming together. We haven't seen a lot of positive signs yet because of what Nancy Pelosi keeps saying. And that's just what she's saying publicly. We don't have to interpret. We just know what she's saying. I'm not going to put forward anything which funds any border walls. So I'm not sure what this committee can come up with or what terminology they could use that maybe she gets her around that as well. And then, of course, the national emergency issue. We know that there is the State of the Union now coming up next week, a week from today. So we're going to talk about all of it. We're going to take all of your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We come back on Jay Sekulow Live.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. A Muslim medical doctor in training publicly threatened to, quote, purposely prescribe the wrong meds to Jewish patients. Laura Kalab, a first-year resident at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, brazenly said, quote, Allah will kill the Jews. She called Jewish people, quote, dogs, and is brutally unsympathetic about the Holocaust. This anti-Semitism turns the Hippocratic Oath, quote, do no harm, on its head. Unsurprisingly, Kalab is part of the BDS, Boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, further exposing BDS for what it is, thinly veiled anti-Semitism. At the ACLJ, we've been aggressively fighting the BDS movement and these sickening attacks on the Jewish people in Israel. Now we're sending a formal complaint to the medical board in Ohio, Kalab, and any other medical professional who espouses this deadly level of hatred for Jews should lose their medical license. Take action with us now. Add your name to our petition to stop vile anti-Semitic attacks on Jews. You can add your name online, aclj.org.
Facebook and Periscope audience, we were just playing a little bit of the Jay Sekulow Band. The band is actually performing tonight in Midland, Texas. You can see the Jay Sekulow Band live tonight, that's Tuesday, at the Wagner Noel Center. It's wagnernoel.com for tickets and information about the concert. Wagner is W-A-G-N-E-R Noel, N-O-E-L.com. So if you're in the Midland, Texas area, the Jay Sekulow Band, I think, has arrived. And you could see them tonight live. And that includes all the members. So that's why, again, one of the reasons my dad is out today. They're out in traveling to Midland, Texas. He'll be back tomorrow on the broadcast. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We're going to take them now in order of people who've been holding on, and we appreciate you for holding on. Dan in New York City calling in online, too. Dan, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Good morning, Jordan. Thank you for having me on the air.
Yep, thanks, Dan.
I wanted to bring up a subject that's been over to TV the last couple of days. Yeah. And everything. 9 years ago, when Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer said we have to protect our borders. Now, this is public record. And now they want to let everybody in. And I think it's because if they fight to get these people in, they're going to keep voting for them in the Democratic Party.
Well, I think so far, though, if you're letting them come in illegally, you're talking about illegal voters. You know, at some point, I understand the idea of open borders. They want this new group of people to be, and they want to come to their rescue at some point and give them citizenship. Aren't we past that point? I mean, plenty of these people have come across the border at this point now. They'd only be voting if they're voting illegally. That would be voter fraud, illegal. We know we see instances of that, I think there were people who did that in Texas. Had, how many was it, 75,000 or something illegal immigrants who voted, who've been taken off the voter rolls now. I do think that at a point, it's not about just letting potential voters in. You'll have a chance to earn these people's vote. They're going to be on long path. It's going to be a long time before any of these people have crossed the border, even illegally, even if they're given a pathway to citizenship, Andy. It's a long time till they'll be casting a vote legally.
That's right. It's going to take a while, and I think there needs to be, as Wes indicated earlier, and the president has said, comprehensive immigration reform and legislation. The thing is, no Democrat is going to want to do that because it's going to ultimately give the credit for having done that to the president.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing they can't stand to have happen.
So total politics. Back to the phones we go. Steve in Florida, online 3. Steve, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Me personally, I think the president, if they can't come to a resolution by the 15th, he needs to declare the national emergency, get this done, because at this point, all he's doing by dragging this out is he's hurting his chances of getting reelected in 2020. Declare the national emergency, put it out there, and then if the Democrats take it to court and let it hold up, then he can sit there and use that when he starts campaigning, because right now, if he can't get this done, me personally, why would I want to vote for him again if this is what we're going to go through for the next 4 years?
Yeah, so the idea, again, I get your point, Steve, is that you want Congress to, one, get past just the basic funding issues and get on to legislating and dealing with other issues, which, by the way, it's going to be tough for them, Steve, to get much to the president's desk in these next 2 years because you got a divided government. Let's just be honest about it. I mean, Than, when you have a House that is this liberal and a Senate that is a Republican, it's going to be tough to get anything to the president's desk. But I do get Steve's point. I tend to agree is that you probably don't want another shutdown. It'd be better to go the national emergency route if you have to.
Yeah, I think Steve's correct that politically that might play out fine for the president. But look, Jordan, I'll tell you this. I mean, I'm pretty tired of the political posturing on both sides. Let's quit worrying about the 2020 election at the beginning of 2019. Let's secure the border when 2,500 known or suspected terrorists are pouring over each and every year. Let's do what's right by the American people. And quite frankly, anybody, Republican, Democrat, president, senator, congressman, anybody of any political persuasion that participates in that process, Jordan, I bet you that person gets reelected in 2020 because that's what the American people want.
Yeah, I do. You know, I think so too. I think if you actually don't play politics with it, it will benefit a lot of these politicians from both sides of the aisle. And it may actually be better for, I mean, a lot of those running on the Democratic side of their nomination are currently members of Congress. So if they're part of this, they get to then claim responsibility as well. It wouldn't be just the president. And that's what the country's about when we get into these divided government situations, is that you want to see compromise that can be done. The president has been willing to compromise. I got to make this clear over and over again. He is a negotiator. He's been willing to go to bat on DACA. He's been willing to discuss the idea of broader, you know, whether it's work permits or some kind of pathway for people who are here illegally but have not committed other crimes, to get border security funding. So he has put a lot on the table so far and been willing to negotiate. But if he doesn't have partners with it, I think, unfortunately, he'll have to go the executive route, which is his constitutional, but also legislatively he has the authority to do through the national security. Barry's calling from California on line one. Barry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Can you tell me what happened to all the money that was approved from all the other presidents for the wall?
So
where'd that money go?
So where, Wes, some of it's been spent on walls.
Yeah. The 2006, you know, the Border Fence Act that passed then, they finally completed that in 2015. There's about 600 or so miles of the border, which is a couple of thousand miles long, that has some sort of barrier there. Also, either last year or the year before, Than might know this, they appropriated some funds. And so in February, next month, they will actually start constructing some more barriers as far as that goes. But the deal is, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer do not want to give the president a win. This is political gamesmanship. And that's really the bottom line, which is why I think the president, his only option in order to do this is to declare a national emergency. When you look at human trafficking and you look at the drug cartels and the gun violence, and you look at national security issues, this is an emergency, and I think the president is taking it seriously. I just wish that the Democrats in Congress would take it as seriously as he is. In the past, they have.
All right, let's go. A final call of the day. Larry in Massachusetts on line four. Larry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you. My question is, which is the better way to go, a national emergency or an executive order? And is there any difference?
Okay, so not in this situation, to use your executive power, you would have to do it under declaring a national emergency. So you would not just be issuing an executive order. If you just use that statute on the drug trafficking the Department of Defense can use, maybe that comes from an executive order. But I think you couple all powers together, constitutional powers, legislative powers, including that Department of Defense section, but also the National Emergency Declaration section. That is the best option. If you're talking about what is the best way to actually be successful in declaring this national emergency and being able to start building border barriers, I think that's the case, is that it's not executive order versus declaring national emergency. That's not a distinction.
That's not an appropriate distinction. I think what you do is you go through the route of issuing an executive order that finds there to be a national emergency, and then as President Clinton did earlier, as many presidents have done, and orders which are still in existence, and that's the way that you approach this.
Than, what should we be looking for from Congress just these next few days as we're kind of, we'll be talking about other issues on the broadcast, but as we head towards the State of the Union?
I think you should look for the State of the Union next week. Also, the Attorney General nominee, Bill Barr, likely to be voted out of committee next week. And Jordan, you know, most specifically, maybe look for statements out of these 17 members of the conference committee. Let's see if they can do right by the American people.
All right. So we'll continue to follow all of this. We'll update you on it on Jay Sekulow Live. But we wanted to give you a chance today to comment on what happened over the weekend, since yesterday we focused on what happened in New York with that abortion law. We will talk to you tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live. Have a great day. Go to ACLJ.org to stay updated on other issues.
A Muslim medical doctor in training publicly threatened to, quote, purposely prescribe the wrong meds
to Jewish patients. Laura Kalab, a first-year resident at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, brazenly said, quote, "Allah will kill the Jews." Kalab and any other medical professional who espouses this deadly level of hatred for Jews should lose their medical license. Take action with us now. Add your name to our petition to stop vile anti-Semitic attacks on Jews. You can add your name online, aclj.org.